Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, shared on accessmedia.nz with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star
Safari.
Deep Sky Adventures.
In the universe.
Deep Sky.
Deep Sky Adventures.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari. Star
Safari. Welcome to White Space.
White Space with Harry and Sam.
Yeah, where we talk about all things space. Now, we've had a very interesting week in the last week. We've been doing a bit of traveling. We went to the Principals Conference down in Christchurch, and then we went to the New Zealand Aerospace Summit, which finished on Tuesday, and that was Monday and Tuesday, which was fantastic. We got to see some pretty amazing things, talk to some really amazing people about what's happening in the New Zealand space industry. And there's a lot going on.
There are people building spacecraft. There are people looking into hydrogen as fuel, really cutting edge. The Minister for Space was there. It turns out we have the only Minister for Space in the entire universe is the first Minister for Space in the universe, which is pretty amazing.
The known universe.
The known universe. And it was such a great, great event. I didn't want to leave, but we had to come back home.
Yeah. It was a full day, so it was 2 days session. And then the first day there was some workshops, academic ones and stuff. And then on the second day there was a whole lot of talks and panels, lots of time for engagement and networking with other people.
And we went to movies as well. So we saw a movie called Goodnight Oppie, which is a kind of newish movie made by NASA with engineers and people who worked on the Spirit and Opportunity programs. And we got to meet one of the drivers of the rover on Mars. And now she's the principal engineer for Perseverance, which is the latest rover on Mars as well. And we talked to her and it was amazing.
Yeah, so she's driven Opportunity, Curiosity, and now she's in charge of Perseverance. So pretty interesting, long career over a long period of time, because, you know, Opportunity was 14 years, 15 years.
15
just,
years,
just over
yeah.
15
years.
Years, yeah. And, of course, Curiosity's been driving around for, 12 years, and Perseverance just over 3. So these are long-term missions. The amazing thing about the rovers, you know, how they're built is incredible. You know, they're built so well, they test everything, and yeah, these things last and last and last. They were only supposed to last 90 days. This was Opportunity and Spirit.
Yeah, both of them.
But they keep going.
Yeah, and so the University of Auckland students have created a 3D printed replica of Opportunity Rover, which was spectacular, life-size replica. So it's the real...
It's really cool, working camera.
Very, very cool, which right now is going to be, during World Space Week, is going to be at Te Papa.
Yeah, so if you're in Wellington, pop in and see it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely worth going and having a look at it. And then they're going to put it through the country, which would be very interesting to see where it could go. And we're trying to see if we can bring the movie Goodnight Oppie here in Wairarapa, which would be really, really amazing. We're in conversation to check out dates. And it would be a movie supported by Women in Space. Women in Space is a organization of women who are related to the space industry or would like to be in the space industry. And as of this year, I'm back on the committee as a committee member, and we're hoping to get as many people interested. One of the really cool things about Women in Space is that it's got a program called Space App, which is for high school students. And so if you're a high school student that you're interested in space and you want to learn more and come and check us out at Women in Space.
Yeah, totally worth joining. And a huge network too, you know, across New Zealand of space professionals, which is pretty amazing.
Which is a lot of people. So There are many people now working in the space industry, and really interesting how the connections are made, and this whole space kind of like exploded at once. We know about space for a long, yeah, well, we know about space for a very, very long time. And when I was young, we were having all these places or and associations, and we're trying to see if New Zealand could have a space agency. And that was back in 2012, actually. Back in 2012, we created KiwiSpace as a platform to basically lobby the government to have a space agency. And it didn't really work because there's so much capacity, and there are so many things that a public servant can do. After all, both Sam and I have been public
Yeah, that's
servants. We
right.
know what it feels like to work for the government. There's a lot of stuff to do and not enough people. And so it didn't happen at the time. But when Rocket Lab started launching rockets, then the commercial kind of side kicked in. And I think there's something to be said for the commercial side, because when we were talking to Tracy Higgins the other a couple of weeks ago, and we told her that we took these kids to NASA JPL, these students from Mount Maunganui College, and how impressed they were, and what a great time we had. What she said was, if you can't see it, you can't be it. And so I think with the space industry, if people can see what space industry does, and there was that really amazing example of that guy who was working at Carnegie Science, whose uncle was
That's right. It was in the machine shop. So we were all standing around in the machine shop talking to this guy. And he was finishing school, wasn't sure what to do. So he popped down to his uncle's workshop and saw that his uncle was building some pretty cool things. In fact, he was making a component for jet engines on fighter jets. So he was quite excited by that. And that's what got him into machining. So now he's a high precision machinist for the Carnegie Institute, basically builds cameras and camera components that go on the giant Magellan telescope. So pretty amazing. And so they have a bunch of CNC machines, and they work those. Get really, really amazing tolerances in the measurements, which is quite staggering.
And yourself, you were saying to me that you got inspired to be a pilot because you were seeing airplanes flying
That's right. Yeah, it's all
above
these really
Blenheim,
cool
and
things whizzing past. I thought I'd like to do
yeah.
that.
And so it's very important that people get in contact with these technologies. And I guess in the US, I mean, I know in the US because I've studied this for my master's, and understanding why we didn't go back to the moon. And it's the technology that if you see it and you're around it, and you inspire students and everybody, then things are going to happen because you can actually see the possibilities. But if you don't see the possibilities, then
Yeah, you don't know what's possible.
yeah.
Yeah. So the amazing thing about this conference was a lot of different speakers up there, from the usual ones like Rocket Lab. There was someone from there. There was someone from Dawn Aerospace. Now they're building a plane, so a rocket engine and an airplane, and its job is to basically fly up into space, deploy satellites, then land back down again, fill it up with more satellites, and off it goes again. And to do kind of multiple trips in a day. Now they're doing some pretty amazing work. They've done a lot of testing. Their first test, or their first aircraft they built, was a very, very small rocket plane. They tested that. They just went up to about 500 feet, whizzed around pretty quick, and landed. This thing is, controlled from the ground. So the next test, the next version, they built a bigger aircraft, and they put a jet engine in it, and tested that for a bit. Worked out its aerodynamics and stuff, and that was pretty cool. And the most recent version, they put a rocket engine back in it, and they're going higher and higher and faster and faster. And the aim is to, I think, this year, to go supersonic and get it up to about 60,000 feet, which is pretty high, or even higher, might be 80,000. Can't remember now. And then, of course, the next step next year is to get this thing to go to about Mach 3.5, so 3.5 times the speed of sound, and then get it even higher, up into the atmosphere, and eventually into space. With the plan being eventually, and I think they've already signed a customer up to have a satellite deployed from the rocket plane, which would be pretty amazing. And they're going to do that from, and so near Christchurch is this a new airfield that's been built. It's called Tawhaki, and that's a joint venture between government and a whole bunch of other people. Anyway, they built this runway. Not a very big run. It's not like you can land 747s on it, but it's ideal for testing things like Dawn's rocket plane. It's pretty cool. So the big move in aerospace, of course, is it burns a lot of dinosaurs' jet engines, and that makes a lot of carbon, which goes, of course, into the atmosphere. And the air industry, I think, is was it's 14% of the CO2 emissions come from aircraft, and the bulk of that comes from when passengers are sitting in those planes and heading off on their holidays or trips overseas. So that's one of the big polluters. And of course, the air industry is trying to do something about that. They're using biofuels. That's been one way they've tried to cut emissions. They're obviously building far more efficient aircraft as well. So the jet engines are way more efficient than they used to be. And they're routing the aircraft so they go more direct. They can fly longer at optimal heights, those kind of things. All these things are aimed to try and reduce the carbon emissions. But the problem is it's still burning fossil fuels, or even the biofuels. It's still burning stuff that makes carbon dioxide out the back with these emissions. So one of the things, of course, is, well, why don't we burn something else, something different? And hydrogen is one of the options. And hydrogen is pretty abundant. It's the most abundant element in the universe. Stars are made of it. Only you can't put fusion reactors into aeroplanes. So that's not an option just yet, because we haven't even managed to sort out fusion. So, but what you can do is, if you burn hydrogen, you get water. So you basically oxidize the hydrogen with oxygen and you get water. And if you want hydrogen, well, you go and get some water and you split it into hydrogen and oxygen. So it's a pretty good process. If you look at it just purely from splitting it and joining it back together again, you split it up and then you get water back. That sounds kind of harmless. The problem is, it's actually quite hard to split a water molecule into hydrogen and oxygen. You need a fair bit of energy. One of the common processes, of course, is you use electricity, electrolysis, and that'll split the hydrogen and the oxygen off. Capture the hydrogen and burn it, turns back into water. Now, you need abundant power. So it's not good if you've got a coal-fired power station burning happily away and you use that power to make hydrogen, then it's not green
It's not
hydrogen.
green enough.
Yeah. So what the air industry is doing is trying to look at, well, how do you make green hydrogen from things like solar power and stuff like that? And then use that to power ultimately aircraft. So we looked at one of the talkers was a New Zealand company that had built a green hydrogen plant for a mine in Australia. So they had a whole lot of solar panels put out. They run that through really electricity, run it through a machine that basically turns out hydrogen, and using fuel cells. They convert that into electricity, and then they run one of these big giant diggers that digs up heaps of dirt to, I don't know, get iron or something, in one of these big mines. So that was quite impressive. Obviously, all of that stuff they're using, it was pretty huge machine. That's not going to
Yeah.
fit in an aeroplane. So the aircraft industry's sort of thinking, well, what else can they do? What do you do with hydrogen? So it's not about getting hydrogen and then burning it in the way that we use an internal combustion engine or a jet engine. It's using it to be stored in a fuel cell and then turn that into electricity, and then use the electricity to spin propellers and stuff. So that's the aim on where they're looking. So we're not going to have like 747s powered by hydrogen anytime soon. The aim with the big aircraft is to get them onto the biofuels and try and decarbonize that biofuel industry. So remember, plants capture carbon. So if you can capture carbon and then you do a bit of a process and end up with a biofuel after a while, that carbon's captured from the atmosphere and it's put back into the atmosphere. Now, the problem is, which doesn't sound very great, but at least it's not adding more, which is the key. Now, what they need to do in that whole industry, of course, is, when you're chopping up the plants that you're going to turn into a biofuel, you want to make sure that you're not chucking in carbon into the atmosphere in that process. So the whole process needs to be decarbonized. So that's one of the things I'm working on.
And there was that company called Stralis,
Strauss,
which
yeah, so Australian
very
companies,
cool name.
yeah, they're testing hydrogen powered aircraft. So they've got a couple of prototypes they're working through. They're getting the engineering all sorted. They're working with the Australian equivalent of our CAA, they call it CASA over there, and looking to certify eventually an aeroplane that'll carry, I think it was about 5 to 9 passengers, something like that, to start with, and then move up into a larger aeroplane that can carry a few more people, I think 30 or something. Which and using that for small commercial hops around airports that aren't too far apart. Ideal for New Zealand. There's not big distances between our airports. The country's long, but it isn't that long. It's only an hour from, well, less than an hour from Auckland to Wellington in an aeroplane. So this sort of technology is ideal for a country like New Zealand. So basically what they need to do is create a whole hydrogen infrastructure to sit behind this, because when you turn up to an airport in your hydrogen-powered plane, at the moment, it's great if you want to burn Jet A1, you can do that because everybody's got a little petrol Bowser at the airport for Jet A1. So you can buy that, fill your plane up, and off you go. You can't do that for hydrogen. I
We have
don't.
an airport nearby.
We an airport. Yeah, you just can't buy hydrogen anywhere. So obviously, it's no good having a hydrogen-powered aeroplane unless you can fill it up. Otherwise, you're only even going to fill it up once, and that'll be the end of it. We heard from someone from Christchurch Airport that was talking about how they're looking to build infrastructure. They're putting in, I think it was 150 megawatt solar farm, and they're going to use that to power the production of hydrogen. Looking forward to the day that there's a small aeroplanes that can use that hydrogen. So it's all about trying to get liquid hydrogen, which is, and one of the interesting things is liquid hydrogen. I think it was minus 256 or 54 degrees, something like that. So cryogenic temperatures, like real, real cold to keep this stuff as a liquid. And there's all sorts of problems, like you need the whole piping system at that temperature. You get losses of the hydrogen because it boils off.
And also hydrogen is like really tiny, so
Yeah, it leaks out in little holes. Yeah.
how many times have we heard stories of light hydrogen leaking out from pipes because it was too tiny? And it's a normal thing, but in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. What was interesting is, like, so people always, when you talk about hydrogen power, people always think, oh, like the Hindenburg, this is really bad. We're going to fill a big air full of hydrogen and someone's going to light a match and poof, it's all going to blow up. Well, we've moved a long way since the 1930s. And it was really interesting the analogy they used. They said, right, so now if you fill up with something with hydrogen, you plug a capsule into whatever it is. Say you've got a hydrogen-powered car, which are very rare, but where they do this, you basically have a connector, the pipe goes in, it connects, it locks, it does a pressure test on the pipe, and then it does a pressure test on the vehicle that you're filling up. And if all the pressure tests pass, then the hydrogen will flow in. And then once it stops flowing, it seals everything up and then it unlocks. And they said, well, compare that to when you put that highly flammable liquid into your car. Well, you turn up, you open the flap, you take the little petrol cap off, you get the Bowser out, you chuck it in. You're probably texting while you're doing that, and you fill up your car. Incredibly dangerous. Yet we've accepted that this highly volatile fuel that you can basically see because you're waving around everywhere. You fill up your car and off you go. So they kind of said, we've got to be realistic with these safety things. What we accept with petrol is way, way, way under what we would accept with something like hydrogen. So the safety concerns, I think, are pretty well mitigated actually with the procedures they use. It's far, far safer than using petrol. And it's just getting people's heads around that. That's the thing.
And really incredible to learn about all this amount of work that has been happening. And it's not just the space industry, it's the aerospace industry, as the minister pointed out. And the fact that there are so many jobs for our students, for our kids to go and do, and something that is not very different than what people normally do, but it's for enabling this extraordinary networking, which is now in this day and age is how people interact with each other, because we're not in tiny little groups anymore. We communicate, we move across the globe. You have to enable these things if people wouldn't have, like we saw what happened in COVID when people weren't able to move around. And I think the most beautiful thing from people talking to each other is this many ideas, when people have many ideas and they come together and they put their heads together and they solve the problems like climate change and all of the issues that we had, vaccines and stuff like that. But you need people from diverse backgrounds to work together like that, and you can't do it just on Zoom. You have to be able to connect in person and go and visit places and see things. And who knows, maybe in the future we'll have a burgeoning space tourism industry as well.
Oh yeah, it's what's incredible though is the jobs that are now available. So if you want to make a if you're looking for a job and you want to acquire a skill where you can make a lot of money, become someone who writes code for a CNC machine. This is a huge demand globally. They just can't get enough of these people that can operate and in particular program the CNC machine, especially the five axis ones. And
Anyway.
because these are high precision machining thing, and you don't need a degree for this. This is stuff that you get an apprenticeship for.
And what Sam and I were thinking, it would be cool to have a metal 3D printing
I imagine that. Yeah,
machine.
we have to save up a fair bit of money for
Imagine all the telescopes we'd be able
that.
to print with that and all the gear and everything. So that this is us, and we had a really, really amazing two conferences actually. It was really great to see the principals and see what they're doing, what they're up to, what their minister that minister was talking about, and how things are gonna go in this next year coming, and then to look at the space industry and what people are doing.
Yeah. So, well, you'll hear from us next time on
And
WiseSpace.
yeah, and in the meantime, happy World Space Week.
Yeah, and get out there and look at the sky if you can. All you gotta do is go outside and look up, so it's pretty easy.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star
Safari.
Deep Sky Adventures.
In the universe.
Deep Sky.
Deep Sky Adventures.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari. Star Safari.